What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my main man, Jonathan Holder. Jonathan, what's going on, brother?
Man, it's a beautiful day when the home team gives you pointers on what to talk about in your show. It makes things so much easier.
I was rolling into this like this morning going, man, it's going to be like slow. I'm going to have to like drag up some like conversation. Like maybe do another mock draft. I don't even know. Like I was debating. I was like sitting there going, what are we going to do? And then lo and behold, the Terry Fontenot saw that it was a slow day, knew that we was going to be live tonight and decided that he needed to help us out, which yeah. I for one appreciate.
Absolutely.
And he gave us a few things to talk about. So I guess might as well just, you know, go ahead and just get on into it. So, as we alluded to, there's no reason to like try to, hide the elephant in the room, so to speak, or
don't want
to
beat around the bush.
Yep, none of that stuff. Earlier today, what about like a little before lunch? The Atlanta Falcons made another trade. They traded a fifth-round pick, the fifth-round pick that we got from the first part of the Calvin Ridley trade.
Actually, no.
It wasn't that one? Okay.
It was the Calvin Ridley trade, okay. But I think it was the fifth that we got for his reinstatement. I think that's what this fit. So, technically, we didn't have this fifth-round pick until fairly recently.
Okay. All right. So either way, we flipped a conditional fifth round pick to the Lions for former third overall pick, Jeff Okuda. In the same year that we drafted AJ Terrell, Jeff Okuda went third overall to the Detroit Lions. And his first 2-3 years, like one was sidelined with injury, ACL, I believe it was. And then the other 2 years or the year before that wasn't really living up to the billing, but I mean, he was on a bad team.
You know, those were some bad teams that he got like real. They have changed that franchise around something.
Right. And so now you're on a completely different regime. This offseason, the Lions had brought in a couple free agent cornerbacks, you know, veteran style free agent cornerbacks. It didn't look like they were going to pick up, you know, Jeff Okuda's fifth-year option, and he probably wasn't going to be there anyway. So they just flipped him for a fifth-round pick, and we get a potentially ascending quarterback. He played his best year last year.
Yep.
You know, so I think he was 2 years removed from the ACL, and he played his best year last year, and we get him on a really cheap 1-year deal. What we got here? Willie, we appreciate you greatly. He said, bruh,
absolutely.
Now I really have no idea what we're going to do at 8. We can do anything, and it will still be the right pick. I can't wait to hear the analysis. Blessings. Blessings
except,
to you
except, except for Will Levis.
I was in a space earlier today with Eric Robinson, and they, you know, kind of talked about that. I know that we have had, you know, Anthony Richardson in, and I know we have had Will Levis in, but I really feel like it is more of a due diligence than it is anything else. Like, yeah, you get these guys, like you need to know what you're looking at, right? You have 30 visits. You're not going to visit in. You're not going to have everybody that you pick in for a visit. There's plenty of guys that, you know, if you pick them, you know, whether it's first round, second round, like, okay, perfect example of what I'm trying to say. Will Anderson, who is a consensus top five pick, has only been on 2, maybe 3 visits because the vast majority of people know he's not in our range. He's not going to be there.
If you're in the 20s, why waste a visit on this guy? That, Okay, let's say that he drops out of the top five. He's probably not dropping out of the top 10.
Exactly.
And if he gets to 10, he's not making it very far past. He doesn't make it past Philadelphia. If he
right.
Somehow miraculously dropped that far.
Right. And that's, and so therefore, like, you're not going to waste his time or your time. And so, like, so I would caution anybody not to read too much into the whole, like, having any quarterback in. They have pretty much already been on record saying, like, everybody has been on record saying Ridder's your starter, like, from Arthur Blank to Fontenot to Smith to Tyler Henneke. You know, so it is pretty cut and dry clear that Ridder is going to be your starter.
And so, thank you, Fred, for the $2 as well. Carter is the pick now, or Carter's pick now it points to it. Like, look, if Carter's there at 8, honestly, I think that he's number one on their board.
Like, yeah.
That's what I would think. But, you know, I could be wrong. But I absolutely think that if he's there, he's likely the pick.
Right. And as Chris points out, I don't think Carter gets past 5. And for some odd reason, if he does get past 5, I don't think he gets past 6. I don't think Detroit would let him get past them. You imagine pairing Carter with Aiden Hutchinson? Putting those two on line, please.
I absolutely agree with you. However, I will say, now they've traded away Okuda. There may be a little bit of a. It all depends on what their draft philosophy is. Are they
right.
Are they still looking for BPA in as a need?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, who is the best possible player we can get at this point in a position of need that we have? If they're not right. going true BPA. Now maybe they go true BPA in the early rounds and change over to need later. Don't know. But whatever their philosophy is, we don't know that.
No, I mean, I definitely don't.
I don't think Carter makes it to 8.
I don't think so. I don't think he makes it past Seattle, to be completely honest. I think that he absolutely – King brings up a good point here. Is I think we're really going to go for Tyree Wilson. He is a replica of Calais. Perhaps the Falcons are going to make him our own Calais under Calais' tutelage. Not a bad idea. That was something I floated out, you know, shortly after we signed Calais Campbell. Because there are a couple guys between Tyree Wilson and Miles Murphy who are your bigger edge defenders. They are the bigger of the edge defenders in this class, height, weight-wise. That could definitely, you know, use a year, you could benefit from a year learning under Calais Campbell on the job. So that very well could be, like, up until we signed Okuda. And I still, there's a part of me that still doesn't think that cornerback is completely off the table. Cornerback.
Oh, no. I was going to bring that up, but real quick, yeah. I want to get this this guy KJ $1.99 here for you. What do you think about wide receiver at 8? Like, if there was a Julio Jones type player, if there was a Drake London type player this year, the only guy possibly I could see would be Jackson Smith and Jigba. But
yeah, I'm about to say JSN is the only one that I would even consider taking that high.
Yeah, and even him, like the Falcons picked the right year, but if you were to say between this year and last year's draft, they picked the right year to pick a guy at 8 with Drake London. I think this year, yeah, JSN, he's a guy. Past that, the wide receivers just aren't worth that kind of capital. And the guys that'll probably be there along with him would be guys like Witherspoon, guys like you know, potentially Gonzalez, potentially Tyree Wilson, potentially
right.
Jalen Carter. And all of those guys are, in my opinion, a better value and just better overall players than JSN at the 8 spot in any case. So,
Fred tipped us another $2, which we appreciate greatly. He says, do y'all think we trade up? There are reports. Those reports were early on. I don't think we trade up. I don't see us. I don't see anything that would indicate that we would trade up unless they are just 100% sold on Carter. To me, Carter is the only talent you trade up for. But I just don't see that being the move.
I am of the same opinion. However, they may view Anderson or Wilson as like the last piece of the puzzle on the defensive line.
You're definitely not wrong. I don't know, man. Like, to me, Carter represents the production and the traits, as to where, like, Wilson represents the traits all day long. And, you know, Anderson, I don't know. I go back and forth on Anderson. I see why people absolutely, love Anderson's game. Yeah. My biggest issue with Anderson was just how he was used at Alabama. I'm not saying he can't absolutely line up on the edge and win. It just seems like at that premium position, you also want these edge guys to be able to hold the edge and lock down the run. And Wilson, at times, he's just not big enough to do that. Yeah. You know, so now you're having to game a little bit.
I don't know. Like, Chris, I'll say this. I don't know if we're at eight and both Lucas Van Ness and Anderson are there at eight, I don't know that I would take Van Ness over Anderson, but I really like Van Ness. I think Van Ness could be a guy potentially. I mean, this is all potential with all of these guys, but Van Ness, he screams to me. He's not as refined right now, but he's a guy that's got all the traits of, potentially like a TJ Watt kind of guy, you know, a little bit bigger, but he's much more, as of right now, he's much more in the brute force camp. Mm-hmm. Doesn't quite have the sexy, you know, like counter moves, doesn't quite have the finesse down, but like all the traits are there for him. And whenever I've watched tape of the guy, he's a handful no matter who he's going up against. He's gone up against Dwan Jones and handled him pretty good. Yeah. So
my only problem with Van Ness is, and with whether that's just the product of Iowa, I would have to talk to the Iowa coaches to know for sure. But like, he wasn't out there a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't out there every down. Yeah. And so taking somebody at eight, you know, you want them to be out there like all three downs, being able to contribute. And like I said, I don't know if that's just a product of, you know, the way Iowa runs their defense. 'Cause there's a strong feeling to me that what my complaints about Anderson are just how Alabama used him. Like, he wasn't necessarily asked to, you know, bend and dominate a left tackle every position. So maybe the people who get paid to project this, you know, for their livelihood, see it differently than I do, you know?
Yeah. But to get us like back onto the Jeff Okudah thing, and one of the things you brought up earlier was, you know, we saw this a lot right around the time of the transaction, or when it was announced. And a lot of people were like, well, I guess that rules out cornerback at eight. But again, you know, we'll go back to specifically what Terry has talked about, which is in the draft, they want to go BPA. They don't care if they're adding to a strength.
Right.
So if you look at the secondary right now and, you know, compared to assuming no injuries and, no, you know, nothing goes out of whack, right? If everybody that we have signed, traded for, what have you, if everybody right now plays, you know, a good chunk of the season, they're not out indefinitely or major chunks of the season, this is a much better secondary than it was last year. Okay. Yeah. On paper. Whether the performance is there is a whole different matter. But on paper, this is a much better secondary. If they believe at the time that they're picking, whether that's eight, you know, three, five, six, whatever, if on their board their best player available is a cornerback, and whether that's Witherspoon, Gonzalez, Porter, I'm pretty sure it would be one of the first two, But if it's one of those guys and they're there, yeah, secondary is better, but they're like, that's the best guy on our board. Let's go get him. Boom.
Right.
And then you add that talent to your team. So,
and you then run into where, like, what that does is makes your depth so much better.
Yep.
As we saw last year when, okay, you know, you're talking about injuries there. Like when, you know, Hayward went down, mm-hmm. when the other guys had to step in, the Cornell Armstrongs, the Darren Halls, you know, those guys, when they had to play outside, it was problematic and you saw that. And same thing the year before. It was problematic and you saw that. So even if, say, you do go get, say you do draft a Gonzalez and you're like, okay, we're going to play him at, you know, the outside of AJ. And now you say you try, like you throw, you know, Hayward, Alford, Akuda, Hall, all in the slot and trying to figure out who's going to be your best slot. Well, now you got a way better, you know, way better depth than you had the past previous years.
Yeah. And so Charles, talking about, you know, injury prone, I wouldn't call him injury prone. He did get injured. He tore his ACL. Mm-hmm. That was three years ago. It took him a year to come back from that. He came back, played some in 2021, but he played in like 15 games last year.
Right. He only missed one game, I think, last year due to concussion.
Yeah. So he was in most of the games last year. And on top of that, last year was statistically his best season as a pro.
Right.
So, you know, the guy had his injury, took him a little bit to come back and get the confidence back, got it back. And then once he did, he started a new season. The guy, you know, showed out pretty well. So that's why, you know, JR earlier was talking about an ascending guy.
Right. Right.
You know, he's coming back from that injury and seems to be doing better since that injury. So,
and keep in mind, he's still like, what, 24 years old. So
yeah, he's only 24. So.
Willie, appreciate that greatly. He says, the financials of Okuda's trade. Did we overspend? No. Yeah, we spent a fifth round pick and we pick up, I think, the remainder.
It was like 5.1 or something like that million.
Which I think
for this year,
the way it all structures, I think it only costs us like 4 million. And so with that being said, we have like a little over 10 million left in cap space, which they'll probably sit on because you're going to need 5-6 to wrap up your draft class. And then outside of like veteran minimum type signings, unless they want to restructure somebody, release Hayward or what have you, this probably going to be it signings.
So you mentioned the Hayward thing. I'll also say this. If you can look at this two ways. You can say, okay, this, you know, the Falcons are going to stand pat. They're going whatever. But those people who are talking about potential trade ups, this is not only this, but just how they've gone about spending and the people, how many people they've brought in. As of right now, past the draft class, once you get past the draft class, we have like 5 open spots available.
Yeah.
Like once you add the draft class into the mix, we have a total of like 5 guys we can sign after, you know, total that we can get after that. So if you look at it from that point of view, maybe what they're thinking is we're going to go and spend all this money. We're going to bring in all these players. And then we're going to go into the draft and we've got this extra capital that we can use in the draft to go move up to get a guy that we really, really like if we can. And then you give away some of your extra picks this year. So you then have more space to go out and get like another free agent down the road or, you know, some special looking undrafted free agents, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, there that could lend that, you know, give that some ammo to that argument.
So. Right. No, exactly. And, you know, Tony Wright says, you know, don't forget about Mike Hughes. No, he's in it. He's in that.
We've got like 3 first round draft picks at corner.
Is Casey Hayward a first rounder? Because I'm curious about that. I meant to look that up before we got on the show.
I'll find it real quick.
There you go. Millie says, Okuda for a fifth is a steal regardless. It's a fifth rounder, people, that has untapped potential. The boy is only 24. That's kind of the deal. It's like, my opinion, if you have a chance, just like last year when you took a chance on like sending a fifth to the Raiders for Bryan Edwards, if you have a chance to, you know, spend a fifth on a guy who has a few seasons in the league and may be ascending, you do it. Like fifth, sixth, seventh, like those guys tend to be not throwaway, but they tend to be, you know, for like special teamers at best and, you know, depth at best. So if you can take that fifth and, you know, trade it for a, what was once perceived to be a first round talent, a third overall first round talent, like, yeah, you take that chance. And that's the perfect risk versus reward type situation.
Hayward was second round.
Second round. Okay. Either way. Blizz makes some good points. He says this wouldn't be possible if Atlanta went after LJ like some have been begging for. Falcons are building a team. I'm confident in this staff to develop. I don't know who Joe is. But that's you could have structured. I have to put it this way. You could have structured any kind of deal with Lamar the any way you wanted to. But yes, they have done a pretty major like overhaul in this draft, or like not in this draft, but in this free agency period. They have brought in another starting D tackle. They have brought in a starting, very experienced defensive end. You've brought in a linebacker that is, you know, a fire breather coming off the edge. You've brought in now a potentially, but you brought in a former first round corner, fifth, you know, top five pick, along with another first round corner. So, also like the best free safety in the league. So you have remade this defense in one offseason. Yep. Now, is it going to work out? We'll see. But you can't look at, you know, the front office and say, well, y'all didn't stock the cupboard. Because they have definitely came in with a vision and have executed that vision pretty clearly, pretty straightforward. In the point of you have now put yourself in position, and we can kind of move into this. We can be bouncing around topics or whatever. Like you've really very much put yourself in position to do whatever you want in the draft. Yep. If it is, let's just say the craziest scenario that I can see right now is trading up to three. Arizona has made it well known that they're open for business. So if you jump to three and you decided to take Carter or Anderson, I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yep.
Like I wouldn't even be mad. I couldn't even be mad.
Yeah.
one
of the very first off-season videos we had, like one of my early videos, it was brought up like, what are we going to do in the draft? What are we going to do in the draft? And I was like, let's wait and see what we do in free agency. Like if we have all this money and we make the right moves in free agency and we shore up in places that we need to be shored up with proven talent, you know, not just guys that we're hoping are going to be, you know, now anything can happen. But if you look at past, like how they've played before, like if they just do that all together, if we do our job in free agency, when it gets to the draft, you can literally just look for talent and that's it. Yep. That's all you need to look for. And
That's that Baltimore Ravens model that everybody for years screamed that that's what we wanted. We're there and we have a GM who is doing that. We have a GM who studied Ozzie Newsome for years, admitted that he did, came in and told you that he was a BPA GM and is executing that on a level that I don't think any of us were actually prepared to see. I like this. Let's see, where did it go? It was great. Oh, I don't want to lose it. It was a great little, great quote talking about, oh well, I missed it. The time has passed. Talking about here it is. The inner circle. He says, if Fukuda balls out to the point where we're talking extension, that's not a steal. That's a home invasion at 3 a.m.
Yes, absolutely.
And you got to think
absolutely it is.
You have to think of who we brought in as far as like Jerry Gray as, defensive backs and, well, defensive assistant whose background has been working with like Jair Alexander, handful of other like really talented or people who have turned into developed into really talented corners. Then you also have, Steven Jackson, who is the defensive backs coach. If they can coach this guy up to get that first round talent, not only is Terry going to be jumping, but we're all going to be jumping, and as they should, you know. So, it's exciting in a sense that I don't think we've had in quite a while.
This is the most excited I've been. I was excited when Arthur Smith was hired.
Yeah, I was very.
But I went in with my eyes wide open on what kind of team this was that he was inheriting, what kind of financial situation we were in. So I knew that it was going to, and especially once they traded Matt Ryan, and whether they traded him or released him or what have you, once that went down, like I knew what we were looking at for this year. And I honestly think that we exceeded expectations this past season. I just wanted to be like, I remember talking to JR before the season last year. And I was like, all I want from the Falcons this year is I want to see some progress from last year. Now, we didn't see that necessarily in the record. Obviously, it was the same. But I want to see progress in how the team plays. I want to see that competitiveness because we didn't see it the first year. We were getting our brakes beat off a bunch. And then last year, we only really had that happen one time. And we were in just about every game that we should have been in. And we could have won easily three or four more games if things had just bounced a little bit differently than what they did. But this is probably the most excited I've been for this team and an upcoming season since probably 2017, the 2016 season, not the Super Bowl season. It was the year after that.
Right.
Because I thought we were just going to take off.
Oh yeah, yeah. You figured we were going to continue ascending. Like I think everybody did. Like I remember going to training camp that year, and the line was the longest I had ever seen it. Yep. I think a lot of people were.
And I went to the home opener, which I think was the first game of the season, and it was against the Packers again, and we beat the brakes off the Packers again.
Right.
And like I'm literally just like, oh my God, God has finally smiled upon the Atlanta Falcons franchise. We're going to win a Super Bowl this year. And then it didn't happen.
Oh, yeah. Of course, it just fell apart.
But what's even crazier is when you look back at that season, they were 10-6. Like they still won a bunch of games. They made it to the playoffs. If Julio catches that last pass and we beat Philadelphia, I don't care who they played the following week. The Vikings were going to lose to whoever they played.
Yeah, after that emotional roller coaster that they had.
Yeah, they were going to lose no matter what. So we would have gone to Minnesota, I think, and we would have beaten Minnesota, and we would have gone to our second straight Super Bowl because we were the better team than New England or not New England than Philadelphia. We just didn't make the plays we needed to make.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. King Seven says, I think this team so far it's set for Ritter to win and be pretty comfortable. I think this year, my only fear is Ridder or an O-line, that and that's the only thing I'm not quite sure on, which I agree, like, on the O-line part. Like, there's part of me that's like, yes, you feel like a big win with signing McGarry and getting Lindstrom with his big extension. But so far, you haven't really done anything left guard-wise. And so that kind of brings ties into what we're talking about here. You know, what does this mean for the draft? This means that, like, Skoronski could be in play at eight. That Paris could mean, yeah, Paris Johnson could be in at eight, be in play at eight, and you plug him in at left guard for the first few years. And then, you know, maybe in 2 years, you let Jake walk and, you know, you just slide him over, kind of thing. Which is possible, because, I mean, Jake is getting towards the what is the logical twilight of his career. So there's a lot of things you could do at eight. I was, like I said, like I alluded to earlier, I was in a space chat and somebody was all like, oh, what do you think our biggest needs are going into this draft? Even though we've stated more than once that Terry's a BPA guy, the biggest need so far is, you know, edge and O-line. You know, I get it. King says, please don't go O-line at eight. I get it, but it ain't sexy. I know it ain't sexy.
That was going through my head a minute ago, which is, like, look, I know when we sit down here, we're going to stream on the 27th and the 28th and maybe the 29th. But we're going to sit here, we're going to stream the first round of the draft. If they get to, if no trades happen, back, forward, what have you, and we're sitting there at eight, and they come up and they pick Skoronski, especially Skoronski, okay, because now you could maybe go with Schmitz, but either way, but if you go Skoronski, that's a guy that played a lot of left tackle. But he has his build and traits kind of give him more of a guard feel, and you feel like we can worry about left tackle in a couple years, then Skoronski's your guy. And if he's that guy, and if he's as good as what he's projected to be, and he's a plug and play, basically the next Lindstrom,
right?
All right, if you have a Lindstrom on either side of your center, which I think is going to be Dahlman. And I think
all signs are pointing to that, right? Yeah. I don't,
yeah.
Right now, they've given me no indication that it's not going to be Dahlman, right? You know,
exactly. And let's for the sake of argument, say that McGarry continues his progression. And while he's not the best pass blocking right tackle in the league, he's better than last year,
right?
With the same amount of run game production that we're getting out of the right side of that line last year, let's say we get at least that next year, if not better. Then you're talking about your O-line that's now essentially locked up and ready to go for at least 2 to 3 years. And that gives Ridder the best chance to be successful with, even if we're just looking at the current weapons that we currently have on offense.
Yeah. Now, what I will say, like, you know, he's talking about, but not at eight, because, you know, Blizz is like, you're one injury on the O-line away from looking like 2021. I will say this. In this particular draft, if you are looking to plug in a guard, not with, like, ideas of, I'm going to get this guy, let him play guard for a couple years, and then move him to left tackle. If you're saying that, look, Jake's going to be here until he can't move, kind of deal, if that's what it is in your mind. And, you know, I like Dahlman, you know, that like, you think the Dahlman's, you know, my guy, then there are guys that you can get, in my opinion, at the top of the second round that will be solid guards. And, you know, there's guys that you can pick up in the third round who will be what I feel like to be solid guards. You know, guys like, you know, McClendon Curtis, out of chat Chattahoochee University or Tech or whatever that Chattahoochee school is, or Chattanooga school rather. But like, yeah, like Chris talking about, you know, Bijan Robinson at 8 and Cody Maugh at 44. Give me Cody Maugh like all day long at 44. And so I understand and I agree. Like, but as I said, you know, anytime we get into talking about Bijan Robinson at 8, the team that took a tight end at 4, I cannot discount out positional value in where it lies in the draft. Yep. Like, I cannot discount.
You can't say, oh, they'd never draft a running back at 8. Nobody thought they drafted. Nobody honestly, like, nobody. I remember that when that draft was coming up, I was like, Pitts? You know, this guy? Like, this is the guy only, you want to take at 4.
The only person who was beating that drum from, like, Jump Street and all the way through was Toby D. Toby was the only one that was like, no, Pitts is the dude. And, you know, kept saying that if they're really a BPA team, then they'll take Pitts. Well, I put it to you like this. If they're really a BPA team and Bijan Robinson is sitting there at 8 and guys like Jalen Carter are gone, Bijan Robinson is talent-wise the best, if not the second best player in this draft, regardless of position.
He is the very definite, assuming he pans out the way he's supposed to, he is the very definition of a difference maker.
Right. Like, you know, he is a bell cow back. He is a, you know, a all-pro slot receiver. You know, as long as he stays healthy and his trajectory keeps going in the way that it is, like, he is, you know, that guy. He's talking about, like, but is Bijan like Zeke or Saquon or Henry to take him at 8? Yes, he is. I don't know how else to say it. Like, I've watched multiple games of his and, you know, multiple cut-ups and all 22s. The things that Bijan does behind that line to then be able to put his foot in the ground and go it's alien, you know?
Yeah.
Jay Black says, hey guys, name the top 5 DNs in this draft. Will Anderson, Miles Murphy, Tyree Wilson, Luke Van Ness, and DN, like pure, strictly DN, Felix Uzama.
Oh, BJ?
No.
I was thinking Ojulari. But yeah, Uzama. Yeah.
Yeah. I would put Felix over Keon White. I like Keon White, but Keon White is like super raw. I would put Keon White like at 6 or 7. Like Bijan Robinson, or not Bijan, BJ Ojulari and Keon White can kind of like flip flop for the next like 2 spots. If you wanted to go.
And then like Yaya.
Yaya Dobby. And, yeah. Yaya Dobby's in there as a guy who's got real good step. Derek Hall. Like after you get past Felix, you could pretty much throw Derek Hall, Will McDonald, Yaya Dobby, who else? Like you could just about throw those guys in there at any point.
And I like Yaya. Like Yaya Dobby, when I looked at film of him, that dude, like the potential that he has is really, really good.
All right. Jamal says, I don't see us taking defensive tackles at 8. That'll give us 5 DTs. Look, man, if it's Jalen Carter, you take that DT.
Yeah, you do.
And you take him and then you cut Eddie Goldman and say, thanks for unretiring. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, you keep them all and then you figure out. You figure it out. Figure it out. I am dead serious. Like, if you want to have, and they've already talked about this, if you want to have a angry defense, if you want to have that, like, a physical – violent defense. Those guys got to get well rested. Okay, they've got to have rest during the game. You got to be able to put other guys in and give them a blow. And then, like, you know, the more DTs you have, the more you can rotate them in and out. And right. Nobody gets overtaxed. And so then comes fourth quarter, and you need that defense. You need that stop. You can put in guys that are relatively fresh.
Relatively fresh. Yep.
to do that. So
he said, okay, so will the King says, so will this running back core look like the Saints could? Robinson be our Kamara now, and Algier be our Ingram.
Robinson's like he's Robinson better than can Kamara. Do every, yeah, he, Robinson is better than Kamara in that he's assuming he stays healthy. Right. He is the guy that can actually be a bell cow.
Right. Kamara, and he doesn't is need great. To be. And that, and that's the thing is like you bring him here. I mean everybody's an if. I'll give you that. Yeah. Like, but you know. He's correcting his own thing. I'll get to that in a second. Anyway, like he can be a bell cow and won't have to be a bell cow. Yep. And also, like you won't run Tyler Algier into dirt, like into dust. We all saw what Michael Turner looked like after what 3 years.
Yep.
Like he was dead. His legs were dead. And you know, if we don't add a back, then that's what Algier is going to look like in, you know, 2 or 3 years. So theoretically speaking, like say you do take Bijan, right? You're looking at a potential 6 years worth of team control. So, and say he's good for all 6 years, right? And he stays healthy. You probably can re-sign Algier for not nearly as much as you'd have to re-sign Bijan. And now you have, you know, your backfield tandem for the next 5 years, easy.
Yep.
And I don't see why people think that that's a, you know, a bad deal. Let's see here. There were some other ones that I wanted to. Millie says, if we go Bijan, then there should be no excuse for Arthur. This record needs to be, you know, 9 or 10 wins or better. I'm already feeling like, in a sense, like, I will be very disappointed if we end the season 7-10. Like,
yes.
I will be very crestfallen.
Will I be disappointed to the point where I'm like, fire Arthur Smith? No. But would I be disappointed in another 7-10 season? Absolutely, I would.
Right.
But again, I want to see, you know, how did the season go? It's not just at the end of the day.
It's not just like, the record. I mean, you have to take everything into account. But
did the entire offensive line just keel over and die?
Right. Then, like, if there's unbeginning, you know, if it's like a 49ers level, you know, everybody got hurt, then what you got there, Big Al?
Robinson is a McCaffrey-like running back. I agree, but probably even better.
Right. I think he's a McCaffrey-like running back with like Algier power.
Yep.
So, you know, he's Saquon Barkley when he's healthy. Hey, the Giants made the playoffs this year. What was one of the big things to change? Saquon Barkley came back. Yep. It wasn't necessarily Danny Dimes.
He came back doing Saquon Barkley things.
Right. Like, right.
You know, so
exactly. So I think like making a move like getting Jeff Okuda, you know, to tie all this back in, like, is it opens you up to be super flexible, to be what, you know, to do whatever you need to do or whatever you want to do in the draft, which for guys like me and John and guys like y'all who come in here and listen to guys like me and John should make for, we should be having a ton of fun right now.
Yeah,
because the combinations are endless, like, you know, as far as what it could look like.
And, you know, if nothing else, I look at it this way. They're keeping it interesting because I don't care who you read on the internet, whether I don't care if it's me and Jay sit here talking on the show here. Nobody outside of the inner circle to tell you for 100% certainty exactly what the Falcons are going to do.
Right.
you just can't. And it's, that's exciting because now you get to draft night, and you're like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Right. I'm with the inner circle here. They almost can't go wrong in this draft. Please don't get Levis. Bijan and Algier would be, you know, Kane and Andrews reincarnate. Don't know that reference.
Willie Andrews. I don't know the Kane. I know he's talking about Willie Andrews.
Okay, I got you.
Back in the day, yeah.
I got you. But either way, no, it's like, okay, you get Bijan and Maul, like Chris was talking about earlier. Like, that's amazing. That's, you know, if you decide that, okay, we've done real good, now we need, like, bona fide difference makers, and you decide to trade up to get, you know, Carter, because you feel that strongly about it, then, dude, that's great. Jay Black says, J.R.
was a,
yeah, well, that he's a defensive tackle. He's talking about a DN. Are you talking about the kid out of San Jose State, Fajoko? I don't know. I'm not sure who you're talking about there. It's the Samoan guy. Maybe it's the Felix Uzama. Tony Wright says the Falcons will either stay put at 8 or trade down. Possible. Like, that's part of, like, why you bring in guys like Richardson and guys like Levis, is so that if somebody does make a call because they're sitting on the board, that you have a better idea of what they're truly worth. And, you know, you can get good, you know, good payment for that, which is, I would love to see a trade down. And just because it would, you trade back into the mid rounds, and, you know, that opens up even more possibilities. Yeah, I mean, Nolan Smith, you know, can creep in your mind. I don't like him at 8, but I'm not going to cry about it. Because to me, the way Nielsen used Caden Ellis is how you would use Nolan Smith. And so, if you liked what Caden Ellis did, then Nolan Smith can be an elite version of Caden Ellis. And I'm not going to be mad at that. So, if that's how they plan on using him, then I won't be. But guys like Nolan Smith, guys like JSN, you know, guys like even possibly Bijan Robinson, I would be more comfortable just in my own mind picking those guys outside of the top 10. You know, that's kind of how I see that. Yep. Tony Wright's making me happy over here. He says, how about Tyler Algier and Zach Chardonnay? Dude, yeah, Chardonnay was my guy last year before he went back to college.
He's a fine wine.
Very. Paris Johnson at 8. If you feel like you can, you know, play him at guard for the first few years, that would be. There was one, like, high offensive line that was said he would wanted to come play in Atlanta. And I can't remember. It might have been Paris Johnson or
Broderick Jones.
Was it? No, I didn't think it was Broderick Jones. I could be wrong on that. Somebody in chat will help me remember. So 8 and 44, fellas, what's your two picks that you want, no matter the position, the two players that makes this team more solid with the first two picks? What is? I'm gonna tee that one up for you, Jonathan.
If we stay at 8 and we stay at 44.
Yeah, saying we're staying at 8 at 44. Who is your ideal 8 and 44? 3 weeks out.
I'm going to say. Ideal.
Yeah.
Is probably a Jalen Carter at 8, Cody Maul at 44. Okay. You address both lines. You pretty much shore up the defensive line. You shore up your offensive line, and both sides are ready to go kick some butt come regular season time.
For me, at 8 and 44, I think it would be – ideally, it would be Bijan Robinson and Cody Maul at 44. Because I feel like once you get past 44, like you can get guys who are in the 6'2", 250 plus edge rushing range in the third and fourth round. You just spent two picks last year and signed Calais Campbell. I'm not saying that you don't add more to it, but I also think a lot of times when we get into this point of the season, or, you know, this point of the offseason, people tend to forget about the draft class, the previous draft class. Like, I fully expect with a better defensive line that Arnold Ebiketie is going to take a major step forward. Yep. Like, he takes a major step forward, and that can solve a lot of your pass rush issues. And so, like, you could compliment him in the third round by adding, you know, a Will McDonald or what have you. But I think that for me at this point, like, you add Bijan, and that's like adding a number one running back and like the best slot guy you have. And that's taking care of two things in one shot. And with the way that Arthur Smith uses multiple backs on a consistent basis, you wouldn't necessarily be taking away from, you know, Tyler Algier being on the field. Like, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if Tyler Algier didn't mind also being a lead blocker. Like, the dude played linebacker for a year. You think he don't like hitting people?
Yeah.
You know? So,
Johnson answered. Paris Johnson said he'd play guard.
Right. And I think some other folks up here were saying that it was Paris. James Williams saying it was Paris. Same thing with J. Diaz said it was Paris. I thought it was Paris. But ideally, like, for me, it's you know, Bijan and it's Cody Maul, and then let the rest of the chips fall where they may. We got to write this one down. Tony Wright agrees with me. He says, I agree with JR, but I also believe that D'Angelo Malone will take a step forward also. I believe so too. Like, his speed to power conversion was the best at the Senior Bowl last year. And he was just raw. And so, you know, he just needed a little bit more time. And now you got, you know, Nielsen coming in who's has a proven track record of developing defensive line guys. And I'm just excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah. I can't wait to see some of the guys that are going to be in their second year. You know, and that includes, you know, Drake London. Yep. I'll be really excited to see him and Ritter both. Like, can they evolve that the synergy that they were playing with at the end of the season? Can they evolve that? Can they make that even better?
Right.
You bring in more guys and they can get better. He can kind of get in sync with even more guys. But then on top of that, you got guys like Ebiketie, you got guys like Malone. I think, yeah, both those guys can and should take a step forward this year. I'm not saying I want both of them guys to have double-digit sacks, but give me, like, anywhere between six to eight, nine. If they can give me somewhere in that range, I'd be ecstatic because I think you're going to see – because last year, Grady Jarrett had 6.5 sacks.
Right.
And he's going to come back this year, and now he's got Onyemata. He's going to have Calais Campbell with him.
Eddie Goldman.
Eddie Goldman. Like, you're going to have those guys with him. I think he's going to, you know, take a step forward himself, as remarkable as that is. And he'll probably be in that Jeffrey Simmons territory of like 7.5, 8.5 sacks would be my guess. And then Onyemata is probably going to have, you know, at least 5, 6, 7 sacks.
You could be looking at a much, much better, like, defensive line. And so, you know, like, Sip Thoughts says, you know, AK and Malone both having at least 5 sacks in my prediction. Like, AK's, like, pressure rate was ridiculous in his rookie season. And, like, right, Sip, he also adds up, you can't double them all. And that's the point.
Yep. And then Troy Anderson.
Oh, yeah, right. Exactly. Troy Anderson, Caden Ellis, even if they keep him around, Michael Walker. Yeah. I know he gets, you know, somewhat of a bad rap, and deservedly so at times, but, you know, he can play that same kind of role of that rush linebacker, which I'm really excited to see.
The thing with Michael Walker is, like, we haven't seen him put it all together yet. What we've seen is flashes. There are flashes right. where he looks legit, like, really good. Real good. And then other times he just looks like he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, the guy has talent. And the fact that we haven't done something with him already, whether that's release or try to trade, and maybe we still do try to, I don't know. But at the end of the day, he's still around. Makes me think that at least they see something there that maybe they feel like they can work with. And if they can do that and they can bring out the talent that we know is there, just got to get it out of his, you know, get him out of his own head.
Right.
If we can get him out of his own head and get him just playing, man.
Now, like, GA Faithful talks about, like, Jahmyr Gibbs, Steve Avila, Maw, Benton, or Tippmann in the second. That's what I'm talking about, folks. We get so hung up on the first round pick and a lot of times forget that we even have, you know, the rest of the draft, and those guys can be just as impactful as the guys in the first round. Every one of those names that every one of those names could all be extremely, like, I don't think Jahmyr Gibbs, he might not make it to the second round. And if he does, I don't know if he makes it to 44. But if he's there at 44, yeah, give me Gibbs. Pair him with Algier. Now you got some real thunder and lightning going on. And, like, say you get Tyree Wilson in the first and Jahmyr Gibbs in the second. Please.
Yeah.
Now you're really talking about having a Kamara. But probably a better version.
But all of everything we've just now talked about, and everything we've been talking about with, and you can see it with chat here, with all the names that we see getting thrown out, like, that's, we're in that position now because of what we did in free agency.
Exactly.
100%. We can literally sit here and talk about, like, oh man, we could take Robinson at 8 and Ma at 44. Well, what about these guys at this and this guy at 44 or this guy, you know. Like, there's so many different combinations, and there's so many different combinations that make sense that if you happen to get one of the guys that you really covet, like a Carter or Robinson or Wilson or Anderson or whoever, that's the cherry on top. But, you know, if we come out of this with a Gonzalez or a Witherspoon in the first round, or Wilson or Anderson or Carter, any one of those guys, if we are able to land, at least, and we will, we'll land at least one of those guys, yeah, unless something crazy happens, because the chances are all four of those quarterbacks are probably going to be gone in the top 10.
Right.
Probably before us. So that leaves only, you know, we're number four in line at that point. So we'll have a chance to choose probably two of what I would consider the top five non-QB guys.
Right.
So we'll have a shot at one of those guys. And if we got a shot at one of them, pick one of those guys. It's like, we just got a really good player on our team. Is it in an area of strength already? Great. Is it an area we need? Great. Doesn't matter. Say, and then once you go into the second round, there's tons and tons of starter level talent in the second and into the third, maybe even into the fourth. Like, there's a lot of, like, the talent is a little, you know, once you get outside the big names, talent's spread out pretty wide. So right.
That is not a lie there. Let's see here. Hold on. Blizz is over here talking about we need another mock draft session. I don't know, dog. We already up over an hour.
Yeah, we may. I don't think we can try to do something with that next week or the week or maybe the week after. We'll see.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Let's see. I was gonna pull it up, and I was like, eh. Sip Thought says, if we get Tyree and Gibbs, I think I may cry from pure joy. I might faint if we get one of the top pass rushers. I'm going streaking. All right. Well, I need your address so that I don't accidentally go down that road. I ain't trying to see nobody other than my wife streaking.
All right. So Charleston here.
Somebody. Sorry.
Whose makeup do y'all like the most, character and ethos wise?
From what I have seen, makeup wise, like character, everything I've read, Nolan Smith is a guy who, even though I may not like him at 8, every other intangible thing that I hear about Nolan Smith out of Georgia is exactly what I would want on this team, as far as being a leader, as far as being the consummate teammate, good in the community, everything that you want out of a player is a hold on one second. I gotta address something real quick. Yes, it sucks. Absolutely. It'll be okay. We'll get it fixed.
But, if it's broken, how is she commenting?
Well, I mean, it's, hey, look, when it's a fancy phone, you got multiple screens, you know what I'm saying? You just close it and you got another one on front, you know.
There you go.
But when it's a fancy phone, that means it costs a lot of money to get it fixed. So even if somebody I'm just kidding, don't. That's a joke.
Even that deductible.
It's you're talking over I think it's close to $300.
Is it the Fold?
Yeah, it's the Z Fold 3.
Yeah.
So
I can't what was it? I had a phone. Remember when they had the Galaxy phones that all had the curved glass?
Oh yeah, yep.
Man, that thing broke, and the deductible on that thing, and it wasn't a super, at the time it was kind of super fancy, but looking at it now, it's just nah, it's not that big a deal, but a tiny, tiny little crack on that thing was going to cost me $250
yep.
to replace.
Yeah, I'm fixing it after, yep.
Yeah, a regular screen.
What? Let's see. Chris says, with all the secondary talk, do not forget Alford coming into his second year. I know I will definitely not forget Alford, and I definitely am not going to count him out.
Nope.
I think he has a real chance. Right now, in my mind, I have him penciled in as the starting slot. I know that they said, Hughes, that's what they were bringing Hughes in to position to play, but I think Alford has a leg up there, and I think he's going to – me personally, I think he's going to come away with the starting slot.
I really liked Alford. He had his occasional lapses, but when that dude was on, he was a really good player for us. Yep. Made some plays.
Exactly.
I like his mentality. He's a scrapper. He's
yep.
A, guy just he didn't initially make it in the NFL. Went to Canada. Did good work there and then came back. So
yep. Let's see. King says, what position holds more talent in the second round? Is it DBs, DNs, or RBs? I think in the second round, I think it's DNs myself. Yep. Now you've got a handful of DNs that are probably going to go second round. To kind of curtail on that, Fred asked, would y'all be mad at Murphy at 8 if Carter's not there? No, I wouldn't be mad at all. I think I'm one of the few people that wouldn't be mad at Murphy. I was watching, I even put a clip on Twitter today where he basically tackled 3 people all at one time. He beat the play was, you had the tight end coming back across the formation to seal off the backside, and he beat the tight end and tackled the tight end, the quarterback, and the running back. So any guy that can do that, bring him. I like it.
Yeah, and I'll say this: is Miles Murphy my first? Would I take Carter or Wilson over him? Yes.
Yeah.
But if those guys are gone and they feel like that's the best player available is Murphy and they take him, I have no qualms with that whatsoever.
The way it breaks down for me is as far as defensive linemen go, it's Carter and it's Wilson. And then it's Murphy, and then Van Ness. And then it's Brian Breesy, who kind of gets lost in the shuffle as a defensive lineman. And then you get into, you know, the Will, the, and when I put these guys in rankings, I'm already putting that Will Anderson's going to be out of reach. Like, he's a guy who I just haven't really even considered because I just don't think he's going to be there. So that's why, you know, I guess you could put Anderson at the very top. So, like, Anderson, Carter, like, they're like this. You know, they overlap each other, you know, in a sense. And then you got Wilson, then Murphy, and then, you know, Brian Breesy and so on and so forth. But no, if Murphy is there at eight and they, that's who they decide, dude, yeah, I'll bring them on. So yeah, then like, yeah, Brian Breesy and Sakai, like he's amazing at the top of the second round, in my opinion. I wouldn't be mad at him at the top. Like, if you went Bijan and then got Akai in the second round, that's great. That's awesome. If you went guard and got Akai in the second round, awesome. If you got Keanu Benton, really liked him. There's 8080, which I'm not even going to try to pronounce that guy's name, out of Northwestern. Moray, 80 out of Moray or something like that.
It's Adebawore, I think.
Adebawore, yeah, sure. Look, if we draft that man for the first year, he's going to be 80-80 to me. And he better, like, pick the number 88 because, like, it would just make sense.
Well, just because of that, if we want to draft him, we can't draft Jalen Carter because Jalen Carter is going to want 88.
This is true. This is true. This is definitely true. Well, I think that's going to pretty much do it for us. The chat has started to slow down. I agree with Chris. The only wrong pick is Levis at eight or a punter. Yeah, don't.
I just think if you were seriously, and I think it's more of a smokescreen attempt than anything. If you were even if you weren't really thinking it, but you really wanted other people to think you might be thinking it, you wouldn't have literally come out and named Ridder as your starter.
That's the thing.
Like, that's my whole thing. Now, they could totally surprise us and take a Will Levis or a Richardson if he falls. You know, could that happen? Absolutely. Could happen. Would I agree with it? Hell no, I wouldn't. Would I be mad at them for doing it? No, I wouldn't be mad. I would just be like, I would have done that. That's it.
Yep. I would just be like, I don't agree.
But yeah, so I don't think we're doing our due diligence by looking at these guys. And I think some of that is an attempt to try to get the smoke screen back up.
Oh yeah. Somehow. Yeah. Trying to, what about like JSN at eight? I wouldn't be, again, it would be initially a lot like Drake London last year.
Yeah.
Like the initial pick, I was like, okay, you know, it wasn't exactly what I was, you know, gunning for in my mind, but I wasn't upset.
If we pick JSN at eight, he comes in and basically gives us what Drake London gave us for the last four games of the season. If he gives us that for the whole season or something similar,
right,
then I'm not going to look back and be like, well, we still shouldn't have done it. No,
yeah,
it was, exactly. And if it takes the offense to new heights and we're able to do everything that we want to do, it's then so by all means, it's a genius move, but that's going to be the same for,
If you
pick up a Skoronski, if you pick up a Paris Johnson or Broderick Jones or whatever and plug them in at guard because they said they'd be okay with playing guard, whatever, and then the offense comes out next year and that offensive line is literally mashing everybody in their way and they're holding up in pass protection and we're rushing for like 175, 200 yards every game and we're just rolling over people, everybody's going to be like, oh, that these guys were geniuses.
Right.
Because nobody in the league is doing that. Very few teams in the league are doing or wanting to go that route. Most teams are trying to be like Kansas City. I don't blame them. Most teams are trying to be like Kansas City where, yeah, you can run it enough so that you have to stay honest, but the firepower is throwing it around the field.
Yeah.
And, but if you come in and you just mash people like that,
I mean, that's everyone's like back,
like that's just it was the it was such a smart way to go about that draft and this, that, and the other. So I'm not worried about it.
No, I'm really not. Like outside of, you know, like it's like outside of a quarterback or a punter, I don't really care what they do at eight at this point. I may not necessarily initially agree, but yeah. Yeah, it says Tony Wright says, fellas, don't sleep on last year's undrafted DT Timmy Horn. He's too big of a man to be sleeping on. Anyway, developing nicely from week to week, and he'll get better learning under Onyemata and Goldman. Don't sleep on him. I like, to me, in my mind, he is part of the rotation. Like, you know, if he can continue to develop, maybe he earns more time. But for the most part, I think he is, you don't necessarily want a guy like Timmy Horn playing a lot of snaps unless you, like, if you have to, then just like last year, the defensive line kind of went down a little bit. I think he could turn into a very solid rotational piece. And then I think he's well on his way to doing that. So.
And if you can do that, you can be in, you can play this league for a very long,
very long time. All right, gentlemen, I think we have done it. I think we have.
Yeah. We have successfully completed another day of talking about the Falcons. it didn't drive us so insane that we stopped talking about them.
That's right. Yeah. And so, as always, keep your eye on the channel. We'll have our last. Is that right? Yeah. Or no. Is it our last?
Let's see.
Defensive draft? Or like, because we just did front seven. Yeah. This will be the secondary. So, we'll have our secondary video come out. We had y'all catch that video with Savion Mixon. He did a really good job talking to us about some secondary players, and now me and Jonathan will talk to y'all about some secondary players deeper in the draft that have caught our eye, which will conclude our series on the draft, you know, as far as like names that you might not have heard of, which has been what we were trying to do, getting y'all familiar with more people outside of just the first round pick kind of guys. So that should be out probably either Friday or Saturday. And then, yeah, we'll be back live next Tuesday with another live stream, trying to, you know, maybe we have a surprise guest, who knows, trying to line some stuff up. But as always, just keep your eye on our channel. And as Falcons fans, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Grim1128, GRIMM1128. Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by and say hi.
Hi. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.